Is that the milkman showing up? Is that what? We got the lawn cutter. Of course he showed up right now. We kind of gave away where you are, Kevin, okay? Yeah, you're down south. There, a little hiatus before you hit the world.
I thought you were just getting a haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the fella cutting the grass, and he didn't realize I was sitting here on the deck. With Kaler in the house, we got Carrick and Brittany here, and I'm on the deck doing the show.
It's the first time I turned my furnace off on time. I said, there we go. There won't be any noise. Hi, everybody. Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of Inside Curling, our regular edition of Inside Curling after many special shows last week. Welcome to everybody. Thanks for listening. And thank you to our two World Curling Hall of Famers. They're actually all Hall of Famers. You guys are in every Hall of Fame, right? The Alberta, the world. Do I have that right, Warren?
Alberta, Canadian Curling, World Curling.
Oh, I missed one, so I didn't. Yeah, actually, I knew that. I just wanted to see if you were paying attention.
Sure.
We couldn't do this without our sponsors, Jackpot City, who brings you what is happening around the curling world. County Tractor, the sponsor of Hot Rock Topics. And Goldline, who brings you In the House. Here's what's on the show today. Unless you've been living under a rock, Rachel Holman's team won it in a very exciting final, the Worlds. And we got a guest coming on. Emma Miskew is going to join us. How about that? I wouldn't think they'd be in any shape to join us, Kev.
we'll see in a bit.
I can't speak for them, but I know what I would be like, you know, and I'd still do the interview. What's happening around the curling world is brought to you by Jackpot City. The Women's World's Championship finished a couple days ago. Of course, we're going to talk all about that. Also, the Canadian U21 is taking place this week in Fort McMurray. And the Canadian Wheelchair Championship is taking place in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. We're going to check in there and see how things are going with both those events. And the World Men's Championships will get underway on Saturday in Schaffhausen. Did I say that right, Kev?
Sure. Schaffhausen, I think.
Yeah, Schaffhausen.
Schaffhausen. But you have to get the accent on the right syllable. Schaffhausen, Switzerland. And we'll take a look at the teams that are involved in that. Looking forward to it. Hot Rock Topics brought to you by Coyote Tractor. We're going to take a look at a couple of emails. One of them that just won't go away. So we're going to bring it up again because the curling world's a buzz about this. Speaking of a buzz, social media, a lot of comments about how people are brushing. Plus our own observations on the hog line. I was talking to Warren last night and I love the experiment he did. In the House is brought to you by Goldline. Goldline Curling's Momentum shoes are unbelievably comfortable with a fast, reliable slider and a gripper that will keep you steady on the ice. Learn more at goldlinecurling.com. Oh, well, I'll tell you what. We are very pleased to be joined by a world champion. Emma Miskew joins us. And boy, what, Emma, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time to come on. How are you?
I'm good. A little tired, but good. I feel at least happy tired.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll tell you what. I've got to admit, Emma, it was like the whole week I watched you guys. You absolutely mopped the field through the round robin, and I was tearing up. I was tearing up at the end, and I mean, it had everything. You guys had everything all week with great games and the shot heard around the world as everyone's talking about in the ninth end. And I've always been loved world championships where you're representing the country. And talk about the week, Emma, you know, of what you guys did and the weight of the world on your shoulders, or certainly the weight of the country. Can you sum it up for us how the whole thing was?
Yeah, it was honestly great. Being in Canada, wearing the maple leaf and the crowds that were there, we really felt all the support and all the love. And it's very different playing a world championship in Canada versus outside of the country. And especially for Tracy's first experience, it was just something that I'm sure she'll never forget. It was the best crowd I played in front of. There were a lot of battles out there, but we managed to stay on the winning side of most of them. So that's great.
Yeah, you sure did. Mm-hmm. And I guess that when the, you know, the 10th end, you kind of stepped on their throat. It was, you know, you just totally wrapped it up in the final. Where do you go to, Emma, right away? I like to ask people, like you win it, they shake hands, you're waiting for that moment. Where does your mind go to right away after you realize, oh my God, we're world champions?
Yeah, it was a little bit of like shock right in the moment, just because of how the game had been going before that. It felt a little bit like we were on the wrong side of the inch a few times throughout that game, more than in the other games, and they were playing so well. So to get that 3-9 and then have control in the 10th wasn't something we were expecting going into the 9th end. It was, yeah, just an amazing 10th end, good rock placement. And we, just an amazing feeling. It's hard to put it into words. It's been a few years since I've been at a world championship, let alone won one. So we were so excited.
And you celebrated by having your cleaning person come in and fix your house. Usually that's a sign there's a bunch of beer bottles and stuff to clean up. Where was the big party?
We had gone to a restaurant in Sydney across the street from the hotel called the Governor's Pub a few times for food. And they had an upstairs area there. And after we won the semi, we went there to eat and they offered us the upstairs of the restaurant after the finals. So all our friends and family came and we had the upstairs of that pub and had some food and some drinks with everyone. And it was really fun.
Yeah, cool. Sydney's an unbelievable party town, isn't it? Down east.
The crowds were great. Like, I've never played in front of such an excited and amped up crowd. It was truly once in a lifetime, I think. It was amazing.
From one world champion to another, let's bring in Kevin.
Oh, Emma, thank you so much for doing this. And I'm so glad you had the vacuuming going behind you, because we're trying to do it and I had the guy cutting the grass behind me. So that's a heck of a morning. Well, I got ninth end. We're sitting here watching with Carrick and Brittany Kaler and Shauna and with the whole crew of us. And we're going, okay, good. We got the draw for two. Awesome. You guys are going to be one up going home. Okay, no problem at all. Just lob it in there. And all of a sudden, from the other end, how about the split? And I'm going, no, not the split. You have almost a 60% chance to win if you draw for two. And then Carr's going, yeah, but if you can make the split, Dad, that gets you almost a 90%. I'm going, yeah, but you might slip through the house. And of course, we're all on the edge of our seats and we're arguing in the living room. But it came from the front end, I think, the idea of it.
Well, we knew that rock, Sarah said it was just out of the rings. And that was a shot that I had played on mine to try to hit and roll on. And she's like, it's just off. So she asked, actually, she said, do you think the split's there? And so I walked a little closer. I was like, yep, I think so. And we liked our chances of at least getting one of them if in the rings for out counting those 12-foot rocks. So if it didn't work out that we got the three, at least we'd still get two and we'd have a chance at the three. And we knew that Tiranzoni was playing really well and their chance of generating two all week have been very good. And we thought, you know what, this is an opportunity we have to take.
Well, and you took it. And you know what, how many people around the world would have been jumping out of their chairs? Because, you know, in sport, there are some pretty cool things that happen now and again. You know what I mean? Things that are on highlight reels forever, but not many. Mm-hmm. But Emma, that is a shot that's going to be around for a lifetime. Your thoughts on something like that, when it kind of, I don't know if it just changes the landscape.
Yeah, it definitely did. And I mean, the crowd was getting really into it and we could barely hear the line calls. So we were looking up I rewatched it a few times since then. And Sarah and I switched back and forth like 5-6 times on who had the rock, like curl straight, which doesn't happen not very often, but we knew it was close. And just to have an opportunity to go up two after the game had been going the way that it was just so cool.
You know who yelled the loudest on that shot though? Like, I've watched it a whole bunch too.
No.
Tracy.
She
was screaming because she didn't want it to overcurl. She knew you had it, and she's not that loud as a human usually, but oh my God. And then at the end of the end, you're right in front of Don Bartlett, like right at the scoreboard. And I don't think you could hear each other. You're only two feet apart and he's screaming. Do you remember what he was saying? We couldn't hear because it was incredible. Like, we couldn't hear a darn thing. How about you?
Yeah, we could hear each other just in that moment, but we were probably just going over our game plan to set up the next end because we didn't have a ton of time left on the clock after taking a few extra minutes to look at the split and decide if that was something we wanted to take on. So we kind of planned out the front end's rocks of the last end, so we didn't have to take any time at the start of the end. We could bank all that time for the back end. Victor's just reminded us, like, don't rush if you do still have time, because sometimes we just end up, you're a little short on the clock and then you're like rushing your shots. So we wanted to make sure we actually did take that time.
That's awesome. Warren, go ahead.
Thanks for joining us, Em, and congratulations on a fabulous week.
Thank you.
I want to talk again about the crowds for a moment. So you're in Canada. You had a 5,000 person audience cheering and clapping. How does that impact you as an athlete on the ice? If you're, of course, in Canada, but what if you'd been in Switzerland? How is the positive or negative of that whole thing with a crowd impact you as a player?
I think that any country that you play in outside of your own is going to feel different, not only playing in the arena, but just the travel over there and everything that's different about being somewhere else. But I've never been in front of a crowd that was that packed, and it was full electricity in there. And that's even what other countries were saying, that it was electric in there. And there were cheers for both teams on great shots, but we really did feel that energy and that burst of energy whenever they did cheer for a great shot. And it made us really, I don't know, it was just, it's motivating, and it's, it makes it so unique and so fun. And I think everyone to be able to play in Canada where that maple leaf would choose that over going anywhere else.
Yeah, it's got a huge, huge positive, I'm sure, on you. Let's talk about you as a player for a second. So you made a change 2 years ago after playing third pretty much your entire career to play second. You've done pretty well at it because you were the all-star in Sydney at that position. How has that been as an adjustment for you to go from third to second after all those years?
I really have enjoyed the whole transition. I love playing third too. The shots are similar between third and second, so I didn't have to make a really big adjustment on how I practice or train, but the sweeping element of it is something I've really enjoyed. I've enjoyed being a part of rock placement, rock management. I think that's been a big difference maker on our team too, is like Sarah's so good at that too, that we really take a lot of pride in where we put the rock and how we manage the rock down the sheet. And that's been super fun to be a part of that side of things. And especially coming from back end, I really understand that side of the game, like where rocks can't be, where the ideal spot is, and then where the plan B spot is too. And I think that makes a big difference, because we don't often put a rocks in the wrong spot because we know exactly where they should be.
So the type of shots you're playing as a second to playing third, how much of a change is that for you to adjust? What's different from that position from the shots you're playing?
I mean, the clearing in the middle, I probably get a little bit more than I did at third. There's just sometimes cornered guard come around chases, a little more of those than I got at third. But otherwise, like, the peels are the same. I still get draws. I still get so many of the same shots. It's just the quantity and the portions have changed a little bit between coming down to second. I think that I have a few more, like I'll put a guard up sometimes on the first rock if Sarah's setup is like both in the house, and then my next one might be a guard. And I probably didn't get as many of those at third, and I rarely had to chase around a corner guard at third, and I get a lot of those now. So it just, a few differences, but similar, very similar in terms of how I practice.
So you're now in the Olympic trials. That's got to be a little bit of a load off the shoulders as well. And I guess the other question would be mixed doubles. Are you or any other members of your team going to enter into mixed doubles for the Olympic trials?
Rachel is currently, she plays, so she couldn't go to the Worlds because it conflicted with our Worlds, or the Mixed Doubles Nationals because it conflicted with our Worlds. And the rest of us are not currently playing mixed doubles.
Why would you? You're a gold medalist. I got a question for you, Emma. You've curled long enough that you've seen and played in a bunch of different formats. It seems the pool thing is the way to go these days until you get to the Worlds. And it is a massive round robin. You guys went through it 11-1. going into that, Emma, when you look at that going, okay, this is going to be a long week. You guys obviously embraced it. Is it a different strategy, Emma, when you look at this going, okay, we got to approach things differently or not?
Well, we just know that it's going to be more physically tiring with those extra games. I like having the full round robin just from the perspective of the pools. It's so hard to make even pools. And no matter what rankings you use and how you try to make pools even, I just find that they'd never end up that way. And this way, it's pretty fair for everyone. Everyone gets to play everyone. And there's never a question of, well, if we had been in the other pool, maybe we would have, or any, that's never going to come up. So I think with at the Scotties, the way the format is right now, with that many teams, you could never do a full round robin. But we do, every year we look at the pools and I'm like, well, you can always tell which pool is a little bit harder than the other pool. It's hard to make them perfectly even. So I did like playing the full round robin. I'm fatigued from playing that many games. But at the end of the week, you always know that everyone had an equal chance to get into the playoffs as anybody else did.
Yeah, and are you okay with, because one of the things, and Warren has brought this up too, are you okay with teams with six losses making the playoffs?
We were talking about that when we saw the standings going into the playoffs, and that's tough. And it was like that at the Olympics more recently in Beijing too. The winner of the Olympics actually split their wins and losses, and it's tough because in that same Olympics, Tirinzoni's team went undefeated in the round robin, and then they ended up coming in fourth place. And you wonder, like, okay, they beat everyone, and then they didn't medal. And it's just, I know that's the way the format is, and so it's hard to really dive into what a solution for that would be, because if a team has six losses and they are that sixth team, do you just give a bye? So I don't really know what you do at that point, but winning half your games and losing half your games, like, I don't know, should you have a chance to win a world championship in that situation? Like, my gut is no, but I don't know how to fix that.
Right. Emma Miskiw is our guest. Way to go, Emma. You represented, as they say, very well. And it was exciting. Like I said, I was crying at the end. And just a fantastic thing. And congratulations on a wicked week for you guys. Way to go. Emma Miskiw is our guest, the reigning world champion from Team Holman. Congratulations, Emma, and thanks for taking the time. We really appreciate you coming on.
Yes, no problem at all. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks, Emma.
See you, Emma.
All right, bye.
Okay, there she goes. Boys, what do you think?
Wow, how much excitement in the voice, hey? Wow.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yep, just totally. A wonderful time. They earned it. My goodness, been on that team. They've only had, I think now it's six losses this year, I think.
Yeah,
that's right. You know, the funny thing of the six losses, I think two are to Gim from Korea and two are to Kim. From Korea.
Yeah, that's right.
Out of the six losses. So, you know what? Just congratulations to the whole team. They've just been wonderful all year. And once again, great ambassadors for the sport.
Well, yeah, congratulations to Emma. And Emma is an interesting career to watch. You know, watching her over the years, I always had a feeling that she would be a much, much stronger second than third. And I think without question, that has been proven to be true, because I think at the second position, she's the best in the game and the women's side. At that spot, from what I see these days. What about you, Kevin?
Well, it'd be hard to beat such a strong sweeper, and that's the part, well, obviously a strong thrower too, but it's just the sweeping part brings another side into it that we didn't really realize with Emma. You know, all those years that we're watching her throw third for Rachel, and all of a sudden you've got Tracy in there that can make everything, which is wonderful, but then her and Sarah are really strong at the front end, because Sarah used to always be a third as well.
Yeah.
And now you've got Sarah coming in at lead, really strong sweeper, and then Emma coming in from third as well to second. Man, yeah, that's a really tough team the way it's set up right now.
Yeah, the sweeping thing is a huge element. If you're a good sweeper, I went through that on my curling career, because people always wanted me to play second because I was a good sweeper, but I would prefer to play third. But as a result, I ended up playing both. But if you've got the sweeping ability, it's hard not to have you at second rather than third.
Well, wait till you watch the men's world. Speaking of sweepers, I love it when Mozoner sweeps down and then the other team goes, oh, there's a big trough there now. Okay, we better throw the other trough. What's happening around the curling world? Brought to you by Jackpot City. Jackpot City casino games perfectly made for you. Let's talk about it, Kevin. The World Women's that finished in Sydney.
Oh, what a finish. What a finish it was. Well, not just the finish. The whole game. Just tremendous. We had a really good talk. Warren and I actually was it yesterday. I'm not sure what day is what anymore, but about the crowd, about the electricity. Sydney just did a terrific job and made, you know, when the crowd's going crazy like that, it really adds to a big final. But it didn't look good for Canada early in that game. You know, Canada had the hammer because of their fantastic round robin, but got forced in the first. It gave up a deuce in second, got forced in the third, gave up a deuce in the fourth, and everybody's going, oh, no. Like, every time Switzerland would get the hammer, they get two, and every time Canada would get the hammer, they only get one. But the big change, in my opinion, and Canada wasn't even winning yet, was in the fifth end when they got two. As soon as that happened, it kind of, I don't know, kind of cleared the air, I think. And then Rachel sort of, I think, must have been able, I'm not sure, but she must have been able to just kind of sense the momentum change. Didn't take many chances in six or seven. There were blank ends. So the big one is the force in eight. So now Team Canada's one down with. And in nine, Kark is sitting watching. I'm watching. We got everybody, Brittany, and we're all in the living room here watching this game. And the front end likes a split, but it's an easy draw for two. Now you're one up, that brings you to around a 60% chance of winning. But they like to split. Well, the split could go sideways. So, you know, we're all biting our nails here and watching the game. But if you make the split, the odds of winning go almost to 90% for Team Canada. So, okay, here we go. And I'm sure I wasn't the only one across around the globe that is holding on to the chair going, oh, boy. The game's on the line right here, because if you miss the split and you only get one, you're probably losing. But if you make the split, oh my God, so what a shot. And what a team shot. You know, the front end figured it out to play it. Rachel has the courage to even try. Tracy Fleury's the one who over yelled Rachel. Tracy's not that loud. She was screaming at the top of her lungs, directing traffic on that shot. And, you know, that's obviously the shot that won the world championship. And what a team shot. It took everybody to make that one.
They're lying one. Just to explain the split, Kev, they're lying one. And then the split is, you got a little rock here. It's not quite biting the house.
Yeah, but it had to get about 3 or 4 inches inside the 12-foot circle because there was a Swiss kicker in the house. So it had to make the split. But better than that, in the end, when the two rocks stop, both rocks were better, but only by a little. So the split was made, but only just by such a small margin. You know, the incredible shot, incredible world championship shot for them, the whole team to make it. It was really special. You just don't see many in sport, many situations like that where a team member sees it. That's so hard to make, like the odds. But then the skip goes to throw it, and the third calls it tremendously, and it just worked out perfect. You know, it's kind of storybook.
Yeah, shove it in the house, and it was unreal. I was talking to Warren last night, and I said, well, Warren, they would have got two anyway. And Warren was like, Jim, do you know how many things could have gone wrong with that?
Well, the big issue is if you miss that front rock, you've probably put a little extra, you have to put extra weight on it. And how much extra did she put on it? So if you miss that front rock, there's a really good chance it's going to go through the rings.
Oh, it's through. It would have been. It would have been. It would have been.
And so that's the risk of the whole thing. It's so touchy. So huge gamble, but it certainly paid off without question.
Other observations, fellas? Warren?
Like Kevin says, I think it was one of the most exciting finishes ever in women's curling. Both days was edge of the seat stuff. I think it was really good entertainment, very high skill level. Looking at a few things, I find it interesting. People say rankings don't work, but I take a note that the gold winner was number one in the world, the silver number two, and the bronze number three. So they pretty much fell in line with where the world rankings are. I thought the attendance was pretty good for a place the size of Sydney, because, again, those events are kind of different in Canada. When you have a world championship in Canada, you get all kinds of attendance when Canada's on the ice, but when Canada's not on the ice, it can be pretty sparse. So taking that into consideration, I figure they got about 3,000 per draw, which is, again, very good for Sydney. Again, the event is just too long. 12 round robin games, it's just a marathon. It's a marathon for the players, and it's a marathon for the fans. And 10 ends on top of it all just stretches out things out forever. Graham Prowse, when we talked to him last week, he knows they have a problem. They've got to get these games down to 2.5 hours, and I think you're going to see what's possibly coming is going to be timing per end, because, again, there's, again, so much discussion going on. You take a look at mixed doubles, that discussion isn't taking place because they don't have time to do it. I think people have to learn to think quicker. I look at a game like football where I spent a lot of my life, and a quarterback, first of all, is the only one that talks in a huddle. Secondly, he's probably got 5 seconds to call a play, and he probably has hundreds of choices to pick from. And then he gets up at the line of scrimmage, he calls an audible, he's got about another 5 seconds. And yes, you're going to make mistakes, but that's part of the game. Those who can think quicker under pressure are going to be the winners, and I think something has to be done to speed things up.
Well, we'll leave it up to you to completely take the bloom off the rose. Holy man. I loved the curling. It was great. And it was the shot heard around the world. It was unbelievable. Warren, we did some picks. I've got a pretty good feeling.
Well, for the second time in a week, we were 100% on the money as far as our picks for gold, silver, and bronze, as we earlier in the week picked the 6 teams that were going to be in the playoffs. So give yourself a pat on the back, Jim. It was a big week.
I think I picked Holman and Korea. I don't think you guys did. I know you picked Holman.
Huh? No, we all picked the same.
Okay, all right. Well, back to the rule, Warren. Go to rule 1A. Every time we tie, the win goes to Jimmy Boy. So that's another tie. I'm up about 6-0 on you guys with the picks, by the way. So,
go to the casino, Jim.
Okay. Let's whip along. The Canadian U21 Championships are underway in Fort McMurray, and the Canadian Wheelchair is taking place in Moose Jaw. Warren, give us an update. What has happened so far, and what's going to happen?
Well, both these events are just getting underway. They started Sunday. The U21 in Fort McMurray, they're playing men and women, 2 pools of 9 in each division. They're completing a round robin. It'll end Saturday, and then they'll go into the playoffs. So taking a quick look, in the women's side, in Pool A, Ontario Team 2, Emma Akers, is 2-0. Nova Scotia number 1, Allison McNutt, is 2-0. And PEI Laurentine Ayla is 1-0. In Pool B, New Brunswick number 1, Melody Forsyth, is 2-0. Alberta number 2, Claire Booth, is 2-0. And Ontario number 1, Julie Markle, is 1-0. In the men's side, Pool A, Saskatchewan number 2, Dylan Dirksen is 3-0. Manitoba number 1, Jordan McDonald, is also 3-0. And over in the B pool, Alberta number 1, Kenan Follett, 3-0. And Jace Freeman from Manitoba number 2 is 3-0. So things will continue there until I suggest that Saturday morning, when the round robin will end and they'll enter into the playoffs.
You must, before you go, Warren, to the wheelchair, you must like this, Warren, your multiple teams from each province.
Well, we talked last week what has happened there, and they decided a few years ago to try and have 2 teams from the bigger provinces, but there's more than usual from all the provinces, almost, because Northwest Territories, Yukon, and Nunavut do not have entries in either the U21 events. So that's why there's practically a second team for every province. So I think there's only about 2 or 3 with only 1 team. Anyway, the wheelchair in Moose Jaw, this is an 11-team round robin. It'll finish Friday afternoon, and then they'll go into playoffs. At the moment, Newfoundland Labrador's Doug Dean is 3-0, as is BC's Jerry Uxtgarden. And Saskatchewan number 1, Gilbert Dash, is 2-0. And again, some of the provinces have 2 entries in this event as well, because not every province and territory is represented. So that continues on as well until next weekend.
Yeah, that's 4-person curling, eh, Warren? And it can be mixed or not, right? You can have any combination of men and women?
Yep, it's 4 people, and it can be any combination of men and women. There's no situation of having to be 2 men, 2 women. It's just whatever works.
Good luck to everyone in those 2 events. The World Men's gets underway on Saturday in Switzerland. God, it's a great time to be a curling fan. Boom, 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 boom. One after another. Kevin, you're going to be there. Trains, Planes, and Automobiles for you. You leave tonight or tomorrow or when?
Leave, actually, tomorrow morning. Today's, as we tape, is Tuesday, so I'll leave Wednesday morning. I'll be at the building by Thursday afternoon. But the field, let's look at the field a little bit. See, Canada, you got, of course, Brad Guju. Checho will be there. Aklima, who's really good. Germany, Italy, of course, Retornaz. Abe, Japan. So that was a bit of an upset in their final. Korea, actually, Mike Harris coaching the Korea squad, Yongduk Park, and a Wouter Gosgens out of the Netherlands. They have an outside shot, Warren, of getting into the final six, I think. Anton Hood out of New Zealand, young Ramsfeld, Magnus Ramsfeld, of course, has an excellent chance getting the playoffs. Bruce Mowat, of course, did not win Scotland. Actually, White won Scotland, but he gets to go. Kind of what they did with Rebecca Morrison as well. They didn't win, but got to go. So a little odd there. Niklas Edin out of Sweden, of course. Yannick Schwaller and John Schuster. So really good field. It's tough all the way through from start to finish. But, you know, it'll be interesting when we look at the top six. You know, you got to put Guju in there. You got to put Retornaz in there. You got to put Ramsfell in there. Mowat, Edin. Schwaller, that's six. But there's a lot of other good teams. I didn't mention John Schuster, the Olympic gold medalist, for goodness sake. So really tough field. It'll be really difficult to get into the top six. And I like Gosgen's chances of getting in the top six, but is there room for them? That's the trick.
You better mention Schuster. He listens to our show. Okay, you better mention him. God, if you're Ross White, is that his first name, Ross, from Scotland?
Yes.
Yeah, if you're Ross White, Warren, like, way to go, congratulations. You won the national championship. You can go ahead and watch the worlds from your living room. What?
Yeah.
I'd be pissed, man.
Yeah, that's got to be a tough one because I'm just looking at the rankings here. And so there's no secret who number one is, Joel Retanas. But number two is Bruce Mowat. Brendan Botcher is number three, but Ross White is number four. So you're ranked number four in the world. You won your country, but you're not going to be there. So that's got to be a bit of a smart. But we look again at the rankings, and five of the top 10 are in the worlds. However, the reason the other five aren't there is because one of them is Ross White, and the other four are Canadians, Butcher, Dunstan, McCune, and Cooey. And then Crothers is number 11. So five of the top 10 are there without question, but the other five aren't there because they can't be. So I think it's going to be fairly clear the teams are going to have a chance to qualify. I think there's about seven from my count that could make the final six, maybe eight, but I don't think it's going to go beyond that. So once again, it's becoming pretty predictable with a lot of these events who's going to be in the final circle, at least within the grouping of five or six. I think it's also interesting to know Brad Guscher right now is sitting as number six in the world. So he's back a bit, even after winning the Breyer. So pretty tough field.
Yeah, the bigger the event, though, the better Brad gets. So enjoy the curling starting on Saturday. Kevin, you enjoy too. Take it easy over there. We'll be watching. Hot Rock Topics, brought to you by Coyote Tractor. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, UTVs, ZTRs, and compact construction equipment to do it. Coyote, we dig dirt. Let's go to our first email. So, Kev, you put out a call last week to the team that you played in the college national championships in 1934. And guess what? There's a couple of people still alive from that, Jeff, okay? It was 1987. We got a response. Let me whip through it. On a podcast, Kevin was talking about his early curling days when he was in college. He spoke about curling in Brandon, Manitoba for the Canadian College Curling Championship, saying that as the host city, it was allowed that the team from the host city would be entered without having won any events to qualify for the event. I don't mind that thing. I think it's a good idea. It turned out that the host team beat you for the gold. In the podcast, you didn't remember the name of the team or the year for certain, but it was 1987. Assiniboine Community College was Skip Kenlon, third Scott Beattie, second Edmund Aim, and lead Glenn Lang. Curtis Coney was the spare, and Shirley Bray was the coach. As colleges draw people from a range of areas in the country, I'm not sure where any of these folks came from or where they are now. Shirley Bray, who Warren knows, passed away in 2020, but many curlers from the province of Manitoba will remember all that she did for curling. She's in the Manitoba Curling Hall of Fame, and that's from Sandy McTavish. We got to hire that girl as a fact checker, man.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Sandy. It bothered, I was thinking and thinking, trying to remember, but I remember playing the team, and we played them in the first round robin game. There were no playoffs. You played the round robin, and whoever was at the top was the top. And we had a heck of a game with them, but they were the host. So I wasn't worried we lost to them. No big deal. They'll lose a few games because they're the host.
Right.
Wrong. They were really good.
And I think you said, Kevin, it was the first time you saw colored rings or something?
No, they were green and gold for, I guess, must have been the curling club colors or whatever it was. First time I saw it. It brought back a lot of great memories. So thank you for saying that information. Really appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Sandy. Okay, number two, we continue to get a lot of emails about blank ends. This has been in discussion for a long time. You know, Warren spoke earlier about the games taking too long. So that is a consideration. And then this about blank ends. We got a number of emails. Here's a couple with ideas about how to fix it. So listen up, boys. There's been a lot of discussion lately about what to do about this problem. And it seems to be mostly about flipping hammer after a blank end, meaning you give up the hammer if you're blanking in, which is a big change in the game. How do you guys feel about letting the team without hammer place their first rock of the next end wherever they want to without actually throwing it? In a close game, they might put it in the free guard zone on the center line. If they have the lead, they could put it at the top of the button. And if they have a big lead, they could just have it removed from play like an intentional walk where they don't throw the four balls anymore. The idea would be to not entirely change the nature of the game, but to make blanking a little less valuable so that teams would choose to score more often. You guys want to comment on that one first?
Go ahead, Kevin.
Just throw some rocks all over the house. Just put them anywhere you want.
Okay. Yeah, well, Ben Hebert would say, I can put the damn thing anywhere I want.
Right.
And you know, like the two leads we got to watch yesterday, they could put them anywhere they want between Sarah and Carol. They had full control on Sunday. So anyway, I don't know about that. I do quite like Warren's answer of each team will have to start with hammer on each half. That would make a big difference because you'd have to gamble like crazy into the last couple of ends of the first half so that you don't lose your hammer going into the second half. So that. It does change the game, though, but not so dramatically. It's just one hammer into each half, basically calling the game of curling two halves versus the 10 individual ends. That's a pretty cool idea, I think. That's something that might work.
You know, you guys, we always, take people's opinion on this, and we get a lot. I don't know if I've heard from both of you directly about whether there's a problem with blank ends or not, because I think we go back to Mark Kenny's that I'm fine with blank ends. Warren, are you okay with blank ends, or do you think there should be a change?
Well, I am and I'm not. I think a series of blank ends creates, we can go back to the 80s where the crowd was cheering, boring, 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 because it was blank end after blank end after blank end. Any sport is going to be exciting if there's offense, and I think that's what we have to be concerned or careful with, that we have offense as being the key focus of every end being played. And right now, that is the case for the most part, but not always. So I think that's the point. But we're getting an awful lot of emails and postings of people who are upset with this and concerned with it. So I think it's probably gritting people a little more than we may realize.
Okay, we'll continue to look at it, as we will with another one here. I cannot believe this is from Fiona Gregory. And this is to you, Warren, this first word. I cannot believe you read every email and Facebook post. It says, how do you put up with all the negativity and complaining? Warren loves that stuff. He eats that stuff up, baby. Okay? He absolutely eats it up. Just so you know, the semifinal between Canada and Korea was one of the most exciting curling games I have watched in a long time, and I watch almost all of them. So happy for Team Holman. I've been thinking about the blank ends dilemma, which do take away from the entertainment value for the fans, but are sometimes necessary for the players. What about a compromise where there can only be two blank ends in any game, each team gets one. And any future blank ends the hammer. It would therefore be lost. Just a thought. Keep the awesome podcast going. Jim is hilarious. I think he could have been a comedian. What the hell? I've worked my whole life to be a comedian, and this girl thinks I'm... what do you think? It's part-time what I'm doing out here?
Holy amateur man. Hour.
Thanks a lot, Fiona. Boys, what do you say? Maybe only one blank each, and then you lose the hammer. Kev? Oh, there we go.
Jeez.
Speaking of blank, Kevin, can't you blank that guy who's cutting the grass right now?
Yeah, you got a bat or something around there?
Yeah.
That's awesome. My goodness. I'm laughing too hard, Jimmy. Yeah, the way I look at it, I don't know if you can force people to take a point because it just causes the other team to be the defense. That's not going to make any difference. I do like the two halves. I really do. It makes a lot of sense to me that because then you're forcing, and if it's a 10-end game like the Worlds, in 4 and 5, you've got to do something. You need to control that hammer. You can't go blank, blank, and then all of a sudden the other team has a hammer in 6. You can't do it. You've got to be aggressive. So I like that. As far as trying, like, you only have one blank end. Well, as soon as you have a blank end, guess what the other team's going to do? They're going to peel like crazy, forcing you to, what, take one. You know what I mean? That's the problem. It's just the shoes on the other foot. But a simple change like the two halves makes a heck of a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think the two halves thing needs to be experimented with. I've been thinking a lot about it. It changes a lot of things. You know, you can position yourself in those early ends, especially in the 8-end game, where you can try and get yourself in a position to get last rock in end 3 and end 4 with that type of situation. And it takes away the real severe advantage I feel right now is going to the team with last rock. It's no way it is an even playing field with the way things are today when the team with last rock can pretty much control those early ends. And if they score a deuce in N1 or 2, it's pretty difficult to come back. If you get a deuce back on them, now you just even it. They've got the hammer again. So it would be, I think, a bit of an equalizer to split the game into two halves. And I think it should be experimented with.
What are you hearing? And what are we hearing? A number of people are showing a fair amount of concern about how people are brushing, and Warren has his own observations about things that are happening at the hog line. Graham Prowse from World Curling told us they are concerned. Warren, what's going on? I think I have an idea of what you're talking about. Little hog line violation thing, Warren?
Yep. Let's talk about that one first. You know, curling doesn't have many rules, but there's two really important ones that have to be abided by. One is the hog line and the other one is brushing. And, you know, over time, things have changed a number of instances to try and, I suppose, resolve the hog line issue. I think a big mistake was made a long time ago in 1974 when they changed it to where it is today, because I think at that point in time, it was where it could be controlled. And that was in the course of delivery, once you had completed and released the rock, your body had to come to a complete stop before you could touch the hog line. And it was very easy to police. You could tell pretty quickly if somebody touched the line before they came to a full stop. However, nobody wanted to enforce it. So they changed the rule to the way it is now, which I thought that would be easy. Within less than 5 years, because there was no enforcement, people were sliding 5 and 6 feet over the hog line and being sort of indignant about it. And so the process started in the early 80s to try and reel it in. In the 80s, the 90s, early 2000s were, again, frustration because the manner in how it was being policed wasn't right, but it was all that could be done, but it was being kept under control. Then the sensors came out and bingo, it seemed that the magic had been found. But for whatever's happened since 2019, why this whole sensor thing has gone forward, fallen on its face, they've got to figure that out because this is a really important rule. I'm watching the Brier and I'm watching the Scotties and I'm watching the Women's Worlds and I'm sitting there with television. And what I do is, once I can see space between the rock handle and the player's hand, I hit pause. There's quite a few times when I hit pause, the sliding foot is on the hog line. And it happens so fast that it's almost impossible to see it, but there's a lot of fouling going on. And it's mostly on takeouts. And I think with the sliders that are so quick, the point of release is hard to gauge on those hard takeouts. And so and it's all split-second stuff, so it's very easy the way things are going for them to foul on those takeouts. I think it's an issue, and I think it's got to be dealt with the sensors. They've got to figure that out because this is a rule that has to be abided by, in my opinion, because there's no other game in the world I know of that has a line that can be ignored.
Well, you're right. Tennis, right? They had all these line calls, right? There's a million line judges. They did a great thing getting rid of it with the, they call it Cyclops, I think, the eye in the sky. This is 2024 with AI and everything coming on. They can't fix this thing? I mean, are you kidding me that they can't? It worked for a while.
I don't know what wrong. It worked for 10 years.
Right.
I think a different manufacturer, I believe, is what's going on. And the new one's just having trouble. So I think it'll get worked out, you guys. But you're right, Warren. It needs to get worked out. But I believe they're working hard at making that occur. They just might have to look at a different company. That's all.
Warren, you got to go back and take one of those videos and put it up online. I want to see that.
No, I won't do that because I don't want to finger particular players. But I think, again, it's got to be dealt with. The brushing one, as well, as we sit here, it's hard for us to know what's happening and what isn't. But the number of, what would I say, emails, postings, things I'm seeing of people complaining about it. And two emails I got this week are concerning because it's at the junior level. And there's a real concern that there is, I guess the term I would use, there's things being done to slow down a rock. And again, they've got to figure out how to deal with this because that just can't happen, in my opinion. And there's been so many issues with brushing over time. They've got to get this figured out. What do you think, Kevin?
Well, that's a major one, obviously, and that's but it is being looked at definitely right now as well. There's lots on the plates right now of world curling, trying to deal with our sport growing and evolving and changing so quickly with fantastic athletes. You know, athletes put a ton of time in to be able to have their skills, be it sweeping, be it whatever, but the game needs to keep up. You know, that the sport does. And the athletes are putting in a lot of time. Well, the sport has to too. No different than any other sport. Baseball has seen massive changes lately. And I think it's going great. Like, I'm a big baseball fan. And they've made a lot of major changes. And it did screw up the pitchers for a while. Remember, lots of complaints having to get those pitches away quicker. But it only took a while. And now, you know, you don't hear the athletes complaining like they were. Curling can be the same. Just make the rules. The curlers, don't worry. Don't worry about the curlers. They'll figure out how to deal with the rules. We just have to make sure that the playing field's level for all competitors and let them battle like we just watched this last week at the Women's Worlds.
That's the key one. It's got to be level. If you're not going to enforce a rule, it shouldn't be a rule. So it's got to be the same for everybody. On the brushing thing, seemingly in a couple of notes I received, the feeling was if knifing was made to be illegal, that would solve the problem. I have no idea. I'm not close enough to understand exactly what's going on. What's your thought on that one, Kevin?
Yeah, that's what Kark and I talk about that quite a bit. The person jumping back and forth, and that really slow, extremely powerful push down to get the rock to curl and slow down. Once you start having the rock slow down, it's kind of a different way of looking at the game. Is it wrong? I don't know. That's up to the powers that be today to figure out, but it's a big change. You know, we always looked at curling sweeping as having the rock maintain its momentum and stay straighter. But should we look at it as, yes, we can do that, but we could also have it curl and slow down? Is that something we should do? I you know, it seems not correct to me, but, you know, I played the game in an era where sweeping, you wanted it to go further and stay straighter. But it's a little different now. So that's up to the players of today to decide.
Did you guys see the sweeper for Switzerland where they highlighted on her a couple of times where she actually jumps and both feet leave the ice when she sweeps?
Carol Hovold.
Yeah, she actually hops into each thing. Like, they showed it a couple of times. Like, oh my God, how does she wipe
with a slider on?
Yeah, with like a slider.
Incredible balance. Yeah. I would not suggest anybody try that without a helmet on at home. Because that's really hard. Like, you know, obviously extremely fit to be able to do what Carol does.
Yeah, if you're going to try it, elbow pads, shin pads.
Helmet with a face shield. Because you never know what direction you're going to fall.
Hockey gloves. Okay. In terms of the hog line violation, there's another expression for it. Cheating. Anyway, okay, let's move along. There we go. There's another show quickly in the books. How'd I do, Warren? Right? People are giving me crap for not moving the show along. All right.
No, we're
Oh, no.
We'll talk about it later.
Well, blame it on the guy who's cutting the grass, okay? Blame it on him. Thanks a lot. We want to extend a, and he's doing an unbelievable job. Our numbers are going through the roof, so we thank you for listening. We thank Rod Paulson, handles all our stuff on Facebook and our Facebook group. In-House Strategies is his name. If you need any media stuff done, get a hold of us. We'll put you in touch with Rod. Send us an email. We love getting them, and we read them, as you know by now, insidecurling@gmail.com. Swamp Warren with emails, insidecurling@gmail.com. Thanks a lot to Jackpot City, Coyote, and Goldline, who make all of this possible. Thanks a lot, Kevin. You know what you do, Kev, is get out the whippersnipper and just clip the guy in the shins with it. He'll be gone. And he'll be gone in about 2 seconds. Don't go to the Martin place. The guy's crazy. We'll see you. We'll see you later, Warren. We'll see you, Kevin. Take it easy. Good luck, boys, at the World. Let's go, Canada. Team Guju.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jimmy.